Well, here we go again. More dire warnings about cuts to public services. The DUP Finance Minister, Simon Hamilton, is talking about hundreds of millions of pounds being slashed from next year's Stormont budget. And there's little sign of agreement between the DUP and Sinn Féin. Now, Simon Hamilton says the Department of Education, that has a Sinn Féin minister, of course, should not be protected from cuts. The DUP, Sammy Wilson, is with us this morning. Good morning to you, Sammy.
Morning, Stephen.
Former Finance Minister, obviously, and the Employment and Learning Minister, Stephen Farry. Good morning to you, Stephen.
Stephen, can I just correct you before you start this?
For goodness sake, what have I done already? We're only starting.
Because you never get things right. The agreement on the budget is not between the DUP and Sinn Féin. The agreement on the budget has to be between all of the parties involved in the executive. This is not a DUP Sinn Féin fight. This is an executive problem, which is.
I didn't say it was only between. I did not. You started off, no
agreement between Sinn Féin and the DUP.
I said there's little sign of agreement between DUP and Sinn Féin. Well, I tell you what, this is breaking news.
Or any other parties.
Is there any sign of agreement between you and Sinn Féin, if you want to go down that route?
Well, first of all, the discussions in the budget will be taking place this week. Simon Hamilton has now produced a paper for ministers to look at and to come to a conclusion on. And like all of these things, I'm sure there'll be some today and flowing over the week. But the one thing which is quite clear, the Chancellor has made it absolutely and abundantly clear that by the end of this week, he wants to see a credible plan as to how we will live within our budget for next year. And that's a challenge which faces all of the parties. So, you know, whilst others may want to throw things into the pot, we are focused on getting the budget sorted out within the high-level issues of the budget sorted out by the end of this week.
Why should education not be protected?
Well, for a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, if you protect education and health, and I don't believe that all of health should be protected either, only the frontline services, you then say that all of the changes which need to be made in the budget fall upon 30% or 33% of the budget, which is used up all of the other departments. And you, as Simon has pointed out, you simply could not live with a budget which required those kinds of reductions to the rest of the departments in the executive.
Well, Stephen Farry, there you have it. Pretty valid argument, isn't it?
Oh, I mean, on that particular point, I mean, Sammy and I would not hugely differ. Though it is refreshing to hear Sammy saying that we have a five-party executive, because up until now, the decisions around the budget have been carved up between the DUP and Sinn Féin, and the decisions around the monitoring rounds were essentially opposed upon the rest of us. We got a DUP Sinn Féin brokered paper at the last minute, and we're asked to sign up to it.
Stephen, you know that that's not true. I mean, when I was the budget that we're currently living with, when we were working on it, and I was the finance minister at the time, I worked with all of the parties. No parties were disadvantaged because there were minority parties within the executive. Indeed, some of the budgets which were treated much better were budgets of ministers who are non-DUP or Sinn Féin ministers at that time.
Anyway, there's loads of...
You know that the politics like that did not come into the budget considerations in the past, and they do not come into budget considerations now.
There is a lot more important stuff to talk about than you two getting on like this. Your leader, Stephen Farry, David Ford, has said in a statement, this problem has been mainly self-inflicted by the long-term financial mismanagement and populism of recent years by the DUP and Sinn Féin. What was he talking about? I know what he was talking about.
Well, we've had a number of poor decisions in the past.
Like what?
We've allowed ourselves to actually get in the situation. People do have to ask themselves the question, why are we currently in the context where we are talking about cuts of over £700 million pounds from a situation last year where people had very little warning?
But spell it out. When he talks about populism, is he talking about things like water charges, not implementing them here? Is that what he's talking about?
Well, at the moment, we run essentially a left-wing spending executive at the same time as running a right-wing avoidance of tax and revenue-raising executive, and those two don't simply add up.
So what type of things is he talking about when he talks about populism?
Well, I mean, we do need to be realistic about revenue raising. I mean, the revenue that is raised in Northern Ireland per head is significantly less than the situation in Great Britain, and that does bring its consequences to us. So households here pay far, far less in taxation than is the case.
And
obviously, people will want to ensure they are getting value for money.
What revenue raising do you think should be brought in order to get rid of the populism, as David Ford calls it?
Well, the two most obvious levers that we have are first of all, the regional rates, and secondly, the phased introduction of a fair system of water charging. So those are two aspects where we differ hugely from the situation in Great Britain.
And those type of tough decisions, Sammy, given where we are, has he got a point that we need to look at them again?
No, he hasn't, because, first of all, there were manifesto commitments which people had made when they stood for this current Assembly term. And secondly, and I made this clear when I was Finance Minister, that before we started dipping into people's pockets, we had to make sure that we were spending the money which we were collecting as effectively and as efficiently as possible. And over the period of this four-year budget, we did impose efficiencies upon departments so that we would better use the money which was available to us. And I still believe that there are efficiencies which can be obtained, and I mean, Simon Hamilton has outlined that on a number of occasions.
But is $700 million doable, Sammy? That's a massive amount of money.
I mean, first of all, Stephen, let's be clear about this. It's actually more than $700 million, it's $800 million. But that's a combination of less money and also moving money around for newer priorities. And that's why you've got the changes which are required. Some of it is due to cutbacks from Westminster here, where the government has decided to cut revenue spending. Some of it is due to the fact that we did take on new commitments, and those were taken in by all of the parties in the executive and ratified by the Assembly, such as historic abuse and institutional abuse inquiry and other things like that. And then some of it is due to the fact that, in real terms, our budget has fallen because of inflation.
Whatever way it's due to, the £800 million pounds is going to hurt people really badly in Northern Ireland, isn't it?
Well, you know, reductions in spending, whether it's in the public sector or the private sector, of course, are always going to have impacts. But just as individuals have to live within budgets, so the executive has to live within budgets. And I believe that there are things which can be done because, there are still efficiencies.
Like what?
Well, let me give you an example, Stephen. The executive took a decision, and I think it was the right decision, over the current budget period, that we would try and keep employment in the public sector at a time when the private sector was falling as high as we possibly could. So we introduced the 1% wage increase, and we also tried to protect employment. There hasn't been one job lost in the Northern Ireland Civil Service over the four-year period. Now, what Simon is saying is we've protected employment for that length of time. The private sector is starting to pick up. Now is the time when perhaps we need to look at savings through voluntary redundancy schemes. That's a sensible thing, and probably the timing for that is better now than what it would have been 4 years ago, and there's significant savings being made there.
So these job losses in the public sector...
Let me finish.
Yeah, but I want to ask you this, Sammy. If enough people don't come forward, would you support compulsory redundancies within the public sector?
Well, I mean, there are lots of ways of doing before you ever come to your compulsory redundancies. But a voluntary redundancy scheme, there are unfilled posts, and some of those posts have been unfilled for a considerable period of time. Do we just simply drop those posts? And do we not bother filling vacancies as they arise? There's a big turnover of staff in some government departments. So, of course, there's always the ability through that churn to do things which and do them a bit less painfully than forcing people into a redundancy situation.
No.
We have also got the opportunities now because the property market is picking up of looking at asset sales, and I know that Simon will be wanting to look at wanting government departments to look at that.
So when you said...
There are things that can be done...
Well, yeah, Stephen. And when you said that health shouldn't be protected... what did you mean? What should go in health?
What I meant was that a bit like the government here at Westminster is doing, the frontline service aspect of health they're protecting, but all of the other things like administration and some of the functions which could be put out, for example, to the private sector, they will not be protected. I think we need to be looking at the same thing in Northern Ireland. The whole of the health budget is not essential for the delivery of health care at a front line to people who turn up at hospitals. But,
so are you talking about the type of people, the type of services and people within the health service that books appointments, the backroom staff that provide a vital service, they should be vulnerable, should they?
Well, what I'm saying is that anybody who knows anything about the health service knows that there is still a substantial layer of bureaucracy there, which I believe could be made much more efficient than what it is at present. And there are services that could be outsourced
Are you at odds, Sammy, with your party policy here? I just want to clarify this, because I thought the DUP would ring-fence health.
No, the position is that those frontline services, I mean, there's been a lot of chat about this, frontline services within health should be protected, but not all of the health budget needs to be protected, just as not all of the health budget is protected here in the at Westminster.
I wonder what the health minister will have to say about this, Jim Wells. He mightn't be talking by the end of the day.
All I can say, every minister, of course, will fight their corner, Stephen, on these particular issues. But there are choices to be made, and I have no doubt that every minister will come up when they're told what the reduction in their headline budget is going to be and say, I can't live within that because I'm going to have to do this, I'm going to have to do the other, etc. A responsible minister will first of all look at those things which could be reduced and could be they could find efficiencies in without affecting frontline services. Unfortunately, what has tended to be the case in the past, and you know, the DRD minister, for example, as soon as there's any talk of reduction in his budget, he talks about cutting free fares for the elderly. Other ministers, when there's talk of reduction in their departments, go for the one, the cuts which are going to impact most on the public to try and create a furore. And I think that ministers have to pull together collectively in this and make the best of the job that we have at present. We've got to get a budget. The Chancellor has made it quite clear he expects a credible plan by the end of the week and a budget by January. And that means everybody putting their shoulder to the wheel. And as Stephen Farry has said, are we making some hard choices?
And any sign of goodwill between you and Sinn Féin?
Well, I mean, I don't. I'm not involved in the negotiations. The paper was produced yesterday by Simon Hamilton. I assume that all ministers have now had a chance to look at it. But all I would say is that this is not a case of there having to be goodwill between parties. It's a case of parties having to be responsible for the job which their ministers are required to do, and that is to get the budget which is available to them and then live within it and come forward with credible plans as to how they're going to live within it.
Sammy, you have to go this morning, don't you? But thank you.
Yes, I've got a committee here.
All right. Thank you. Good morning. Stephen Farry, your reaction to that? So the DUP would not protect the health budget?
Well, Sammy and I do agree on some points. I think it's important that I do say that and give people some degree of hope that we can actually broker some deals around this issue this week. I mean, revenue raising has to go hand in hand with making our government more efficient.
In terms of the health budget, do you agree with the DUP that backroom staff and anything other than the frontline services should be up for grabs?
Well, we don't have the space and the luxury of giving 100% protection to any department. The scale of the crisis that's facing us does not allow us that luxury. So choices will have to be made. Now, in terms of what may turn out to be job losses within the public sector, let's make no bones about this, Stephen. I mean, the public sector in Northern Ireland will shrink on the basis of the budget figures that we are facing, not just in terms of next year, but over the rest of the decade. So we are going to have to see a situation where we are rebalancing our economy between the public sector and
do you think that can be done by voluntary redundancy only?
Well, I think there hasn't been an opportunity for redundancies within the public sector for quite some time. So I would be optimistic that any job losses could be handled within the context of voluntary redundancy, though obviously we'll have to see how that works in practice. But I think it's important that people are realistic in this regard and aren't making false promises that we will be able to protect the volume of
right.
jobs.
So you think there may be compulsory redundancies? That's what you're saying, isn't it?
I think it is unlikely at this stage that it will come to that, but it's important that people never rule anything out.